the Word was first. The Word present to God. God present to the Word. The Word was God, in readiness for God from day one. Everything was created through him. Nothing, not one thing, came into being without him. What came into existence was life. And the life was light to live by. The light life blazed out of the darkness. The darkness couldn't put it out. There once was a man, his name John, sent by God to point out the way to the life light. He came to show everyone where to look, who to believe in. John was not himself the light. He was there to show the way to the light. The life light was the real thing. Every person entering life, he brings into light. He was in the world. The world was there through him, and yet the world didn't even notice. He came to his own people, but they didn't want him. But whoever did want him, who believed he was who he claimed and would do what he said, he made to be their true selves, their child of God selves. These are the God begotten, not blood begotten, not flesh begotten, not sex begotten. The Word became flesh and blood and moved into the neighborhood. We saw the glory with our own eyes, the one-of-a-kind glory, like Father, like Son, generous inside and out, true from start to finish. John pointed him out and called, "This is the one I told you was coming after me, but in fact was ahead of me. He has always been ahead of me, has always had the first word." We all live off his generous bounty, gift after gift after gift.
Grace and peace be to each of you as we gather today on our continued journey through Spiritual Life Week, experiencing God, nurturing others. For those of you who have entered this journey for the first time, I would like to just introduce our speakers briefly. Michael did a wonderful job yesterday, and if you want to listen to that introduction, go back to the webcast and you can hear that introduction more fully. John has a bachelor's degree in rehab counseling and master's of social work from Virginia Commonwealth. He worked with addictions and trauma for 15 years. Since 2003, he has been working in private practice with a focus on trauma recovery. He worked with individuals, couples, and some children and adolescents. He has been trained, and sometimes spiritual directors are strained. He's a trained spiritual director. Sandy is a pastor of worship and congregational care at Souderton Mennonite Church. She graduated from EMU in 1986 and has a master's degree in social work and a master's degree in Christian education. She has been involved in prison, chaplaincy, volunteer service, mental health, crisis counseling, pastoring, and writing devotional books. It's a blessing to have you both here, and we're looking forward to hearing from you this day. Pray with me for a moment. Thank you, Spirit of Christ, that you have moved into the neighborhood and that you are present with us. Open our hearts and minds to hear, to listen, and to respond to the gift of your grace this day, in this moment. Amen.
Lord, what shall I do that I cannot quiet myself? Here's the bread, and here's the cup, and I can't quiet myself. To enter the language of transformation, to learn the importance of stillness with one's hands folded, when will my eyes of rejoicing turn peaceful? When will my joyful feet grow still? When will my heart stop its prancing as over the summer grass? Lord, I would run for you, loving the miles for your sake. I would climb the highest tree to be that much closer. Lord, I will learn also to kneel down into the world of the invisible, the inscrutable, and the everlasting. Then I will move no more than the leaves of a tree on a day of no wind, bathed in light, like the wanderer who has come home at last and kneels in peace, done with all unnecessary things, every motion, even words.
I wonder how you heard that just now. I wonder what caught your attention. If you came, as Brenda came at the beginning, not able to quiet yourself, or if you came this morning feeling the sunshine and were already at the end of this poem, bathed in light, ready to move no more, ready to sit in silence maybe, ready to think about silence more. You know, that's what we want to talk about today more and feel more and spend time more in, giving each other hopefully permission to bathe ourselves in that silence and be done with all unnecessary things, at least just for this time today.
Even words at some point. For whatever reason or reasons, I have always been drawn to silence. So whether we've lived in the city or out in the woods where we currently live, it's always something that attracts me and draws me. And in a couple of the formation classes that we were privileged to be part of this morning and reflecting on my own journey, I was aware that part of what formed me to put a name to silence and what it provides was an experience that Sandy actually shared, working with Outspoken, which was a bicycling organization under the Mennonite Board of Missions that some of you have probably either maybe took part in at some point in your life before it died a painful death in the early 80s. But we began those days, wherever we were, whoever we were biking with about 15 minutes of quiet reflection on our own. And as a 22-year-old kid who was trying to be responsible for adults twice my age or youth groups that were out of control, I needed that time to get on with the day because I had no clue what I was doing. And that's where I realized what silence provided for me. So still to this day, I find myself seeking that out. And recently, one morning, I was sitting in the woods with my dogs, and I was reflecting on why this continues to be so important to me, why silence draws me, when I know that back in the house and back in my office are lists of things that are much more important than what I'm doing here in the woods. Or so it seems. So this is what I came up with. At this point, why I do this. In the woods, I am wrapped in beauty and love just by being there. The trees don't ask what I've done all week or why I've been absent. They smile and wave from the exact places where they stood last week, last month, last year. They're always out there, rooted and waiting. A visible reminder of our connection to our shared creator. Some days I stagger into the woods with too many stories of broken lives and dreams, too many faces lined with creases and tears. So much trying, so much effort, so much pain. But in among the trees, I am reminded how to let go. The forest floor is littered with broken limbs and decades of fallen leaves. Every year, they have a season of letting go, and they make it look so natural as they surrender an entire season of growth. Here, I'm encouraged to breathe, to relax, to let go. I am reminded of how life requires loss, brokenness, and letting go. And if I keep coming back through the loss and the pain, I'm given private lessons in how to stand through frigid days and long dark nights with tiny wrapped buds of hope offered to the world at the very end of their limbs. And it's impossible to not hear them shouting in the spring and summer about all the possibilities and new growth. So here I am coached in a God-ordained rhythm of life. Among the trees, I'm given permission to cease all activity and to enter into stillness, to become like a tree planted by the river of life, no matter what season I find myself in.
John is the obvious poet. I don't really like silence all that much. Although, maybe since I'm trying in the second half of my life not to be so dramatic, I should really say I'm not drawn to silence quite as much as John is, or as often. I used to say that the reason I became a pastor in a large church was because I loved having staff meetings first thing on Monday morning. And the place, there were five pastors, and then there were also other people working in the offices around that I could talk to as soon as we were done with our staff meeting. Great way to start the week. And I couldn't figure out how John could stand all of us leaving. The kids go to school, I go to work, and he stays home. That was beyond me. I was just glad that we had switched places because...
Me too.
Yeah, we're in a much better place with me going off to be with people, and he gets to be with his trees. My favorite time of the week is Sunday morning when all the saints and sinners arrive and fill the church building, and then Wednesday night, what we call holy chaos, when everything's happening. We get together for dinner, and the bells practice, and the choirs practice, and we have Bible studies, and kids are playing in the gym, and the clubs are happening. That's just my favorite time of the week. But the reason that I agreed to talk with John today about silence and for us to consider silence in this series on how to care for our souls is that I do believe in it. And in the right doses, it is what I need to stay healthy as possible and to keep being able to give out to others and to keep being able to go back on Sunday morning and Wednesday nights and keep being part of the chaos and keep loving it. And I can give testimony to wonderful times of silence, and I believe that when I do allow myself to be invited into that space, to pray and to be in ways that are not my natural mode of being, that's when I grow the most. That's how I discover the parts of God and the parts of myself that I don't notice all the time when I keep going 200 miles an hour. Going and doing is still my most natural way of being in the world, and I love that, and I think that will always be who I am. But I also know it's the fastest way to crash and burn. I've also experienced times of doing that when my body gives out and I get sick and weary, and I know that silence is what I need. So I know that if I want to last in this work of pastoring and actually being in this world in general, I know I have to find ways to care for myself while I care for others. So both of our personalities need silence. John needs a lot of silence to be able to be with people, and I need a lot of time with people to be able to go off and enjoy the silence. And I'm guessing that all of you are somewhere in between there.
we want to use a definition for silence that comes out of the Spiritual Disciplines Handbook. And it says that silence is described as a regenerative practice of attending and listening to God in quiet without interruption and noise. And I like to add to that, it's also a regenerative practice of attending and listening to others and to ourselves, that also regenerates. It goes on to say that silence provides freedom from speaking as well as listening or writing words or music.
So when we speak of silence as a spiritual practice, as a way of caring for ourselves and being cared for by God and a way of caring for others, we're not going to be talking about necessarily an absence of noise, because in reality we can't eliminate noise from our modern life, but we can give ourselves permission to not attend to the noise, to notice that the noise is not ours to take care of, but instead to notice and give our attention to what might be happening in our own silence. So we're not going to define silence as the absence of noise.
In fact, if you try to find that, they say that there are only 12 places in the continental United States, and they're all west of the Mississippi, where you can find 15 minutes of daylight hours and not hear a human-created sound. And if that fascinates you and you want to find one of these places, there's one in Olympic National Park, and they actually have a website called onesquareinch.org. So, though our definition of silence includes without noise, this kind of external silence in the world is pretty difficult to find. And as Mary Oliver's poem indicates, it's also pretty difficult to find this kind of internal silence within ourselves. Why then would we do this? Why would we intentionally put this into our lives?
One kind of interesting thing is that the rise in noise in our society has become a concern to people in general. The number one neighborhood complaint, according to the U.S. Census Bureau, is now not crime, but noise.
Did you know that the root word for noise is nausea? And that extended periods of noise actually creates this process in our brain where our neurons begin to shrink.
We probably all know that too much noise leads to hypertension and also hearing loss, and for sure, stress and anxiety at points.
In August, Sandy's dad was admitted to the local hospital into the ICU with pneumonia and a heart attack. And in the early 2 or 3 days of that, he was really struggling. And I was on my shift one day of being present with him and trying to provide comfort. He was on high doses of medication, which were supposed to be sedating and calming. He had a tight mask on his face that was forcing oxygen into his lungs. And even so, the man could not quit talking. Now, if you know Sandy's dad, foremost, he is a preacher. And as you know, preachers love words. So in the midst of gasping for any molecule of air he could find, he's attempting to communicate through this mask to me something about some theological idea or truth. And as a good son-in-law, I was doing my best to listen, which I do well, but I was also trying to give him permission, or even maybe the commandment, just to lay back in his bed and to breathe. So while this is happening, I happen to look out of his room across the nurse's station, and on the far wall was a big banner that said, "Silence is golden." And I started thinking about, where does that phrase come from, and why do we speak about silence being golden? So I started looking it up, and I found the earliest English translation from a poet, Thomas Carlyle, who translated that phrase from German. And he goes on to say this about silence. "Silence is the element in which great things fashion themselves together, so that at length they may emerge full-formed and majestic into the daylight of life." So it does sound a bit like the process of refining gold, a process that takes time and that brings together something that's more majestic. Hence, silence is golden. So to actively participate in silence is a refining process. That's both about letting go, letting the impurities go, and also then about gaining something better, about fashioning something together that's better. So let's look at some of the reasons why we participate in silence and how silence allows God to care for us and then us to care for others.
So since we're followers of Christ, hopefully our attention turns first of all and often after that to how Jesus lived his life and to learn how we're to live, not as shoulds, but as in how to be the best spouses, the best parents, the best grandparents, the best pastors, the best therapists, the best friends we can be. So I don't know a lot about the history of the Methodist Church or the Presbyterians or other denominations that are represented here among you, but I know the Mennonite Church has been notorious to working hard at our salvation, even though we wouldn't say that. We wouldn't say that we have to earn our way into God's grace or heaven or anything like that, but we work really hard at it. And we have a hard time not calling silence a waste of time or feeling lazy when we need to stop sometimes, even to heal. I watch my dad having a really hard time when the nurses say, you just have to be quiet and still to heal. It's really hard for him and for all of us to take that time to feel permission that that's part of our work, to take time to be. Or I have even heard reflection time called navel gazing, like a bad thing, like that you would waste your time looking at yourself so long that you'll probably forget that there's even a world out there. So the stories that we highlight most of all in Jesus' life are often the ones that tell of his activity. But we only have recorded for us 3 years of his public ministry, and he lived 33 years. And so I have to think that he spent a lot of time alone to be ready for those 3 years. And even in the ones we do know about, we often have stories of him going away to be by himself or with his best friends, to take a break from the crowds, to get away from church, to take his days off.
Silence also creates a space that we can listen and be more attentive. Think about when you walk out into a falling snow, when you're not consumed with the thoughts of how to clean this up or how you're going to get to work, but you just walk out into it to enjoy it, there's a silence there that you almost feel like your ears are sort of leaning forward into that silence. It builds a sense of being more attentive. In music, I was listening to the music this morning, and I was attentive to the spaces between the notes and how that space creates effect and increases the mood and intensity of the piece. In fact, brain studies show that if there is a 1 to 2 second pause in a piece of music, this silence triggers a flurry of mental activity. And then when the music starts up again, the mental activity that shows up in our brain shifts to another part of our brain. So now we have more of ourselves involved and engaged in this process. Slowly over years, I'm learning how when I don't know what to do in a session with someone, when I don't know what to say, I'm slowly learning that I can trust the silence that happens when I don't know what to say next. And in this silence, the other person can hear their own inner working and not mine. And out of this can create new truth or new perspectives. So maybe the same is true when God is silent with us, that we become more attentive to our own true selves and discover the uniqueness of who we're created to be. However, that doesn't necessarily always please us when God is silent. And we may be more likely to respond like St. Teresa of Avila, who once said to God, "It's no wonder you have so few friends the way you treat them."
Another reason to pursue silence is that it slows us down. And in the stillness, sometimes, often, we can see things more clearly. It's a great quote by Gandhi. It says, "In the attitude of silence, the soul finds the path in a clearer light. And what is elusive and deceptive resolves itself into crystal think clearness. And that makes me think about a lot of times when I wake up in the morning, especially Monday mornings, and I'm thinking about the whole week in front of me and the lists that I've either made that are endless or the lists that I need to make yet. And sometimes I just have to tell myself to not even think, at least not till I get a cup of coffee, which slows me down enough to pour the water in. And that ritual of making coffee becomes my first prayer, at least my most important prayer, if I can let that be my first one, instead of getting crazy into the day, into the busyness of what there is. So sometimes when I do that, what would have been my list or what is my list totally changes. And what emerges is more what needs to be done. Some things get added, some things fall away, some things fall to the bottom of if there's time. And if it shows up the next day, maybe it was important, maybe it never becomes important again. So when the swirl of words gets quiet, what is most crucial can rise to the top. So silence helps me in discernment, even in little things like my lists. I love the phrase, slow down to the speed of wisdom. It's not my easiest thing to do, but I love it. I love the thought. When we want to see something better with our eyes, when we see something along the road that we want to look at more, we slow our car down. So when we want to understand our relationship with God or with each other, it makes sense that we need to slow down. And silence does encourage that slower pace to the point of stillness. I think I learned something about this when my children were little, and the only thing that worked sometimes was putting them in time out. And as I look back on that time now, I think of it not as a punishment, like they probably would have received it at that time, but as a way of changing gears, to say, go to a whole different space, look at the wall so you don't have all this distraction, not so that you can feel like a dunce, but so that you can refocus, so that you can take time and change your patterns. And now, as they're 18 and 21, I watch them taking their own time out and even calling it that. And I feel myself doing that same thing sometimes when I get overwhelmed, saying, I need time out in a good way.
So as silence slows us down, it also then gives us the opportunity to open up. And in that opening to ourselves, to God, or to other people that we are in relationship with, Psalm 42, be still and know. Be still and know that I am God. Silence seems to bring a kind of knowing that lies below our cerebral cortex, below our logical, articulate language self, below what we might notice first thing on the surface. In some brain research that I've read about, I have discovered that they are now saying that around other parts of our body, there are also our brain-like tissue. One of those being around our heart, and one of those being around our stomach, which gives credence to some of our sayings over the years that I knew something or I decided something because I felt it in my heart, or it was a gut thing. That there's a processing that can happen when we can drop below this part of our body that's always making sense out of things. Mother Teresa, who is known for her wonderful work in the world, also has this to say about God. We need to find God, and God cannot be found in noise and restlessness. God is the friend of silence. See how nature, trees, flowers, grass grow in silence. See the stars, the moon, and the sun, how they move in silence. We need silence to be able to touch souls. And Merton, the monk, reminds us how silence also opens us up to other people by saying this: it is in deep silence and solitude that I find the gentleness with which I can truly love my brother and sister.
I get the chance as pastor of worship to, I think, make that silence happen by how we get ready for worship, how we set the room up. And I watch Kevin doing that here, and others of you are involved in that. How you, what colors you use as people walk into the sanctuary, can they feel that permission to be silent, to be in awe of God, to be reverent? By how we choose the candles or the flowers or water or other visuals that speak to each person in their own language in a way that goes beyond words.
I love creating spaces, whether it's in my office, by how I set it up to make it feel welcoming to me, or in building labyrinths or gardens or trails in the woods. These are spaces that invite people in. Yesterday, we talked about how words are inviting, but spaces also invite people in without needing to say, enter here, go there. They simply are, and they invite people into that space in a way that helps us go deeper than words.
Fifth reason to practice silence might be, as the poet that John already quoted, Thomas Carlyle, says again, under all speech that is good for anything, there lies a silence that is better. Silence is deep as eternity. Speech is shallow as time. I'm still working on that one. I'm not sure I agree with it, but it's really good. That speech is good for anything, and there's a silence that is better. I think that's hard for people that love words to give up, but there's also a truth to it that I know. And it does make me think of a time, a long time, 1989, I was on a silent retreat for a week. I had one hour each day that I could talk to the sister that was my spiritual director for that time. And I remember that time as just lots of insights and lots of feeling of warmth. I felt God's presence in a real way, and I just wrote pages and pages in my journal. And she listened to my insights and my wisdom. And I don't remember what wisdom she gave back to me except this one piece. She said to me on about the fourth day, "Isn't it wonderful how God can go deeper than words?" And that really stopped me, and I didn't write any more words the rest of that week, but I did go deeper with God.
And now, if we're honest, even those of us who are drawn to silence also have this experience of being frightened or scared by what happens in that space where we can't necessarily put it into words any longer. Going deeper can be full of unknown and dark, full of mystery, many attributes of God that we don't really find ourselves attracted to. Silence reminds us of these dark, unknown, mysterious urges and desires, thoughts and feelings that are also within our own selves. And this is where we're tempted to believe it's best to leave these parts alone. And I think this is exactly where it's most important to move into this unknown, into this darkness accompanied by a God that is familiar with darkness and with this space. We may not often understand as we are accustomed to with words, but to trust here that this is where the light shines in the darkness.
In the book, The Help, which maybe you've seen the movie now too, there's this wonderful scene where Minnie, the very outspoken maid, finds the white woman that she works for curled up in the bathroom after suffering her fourth miscarriage. And this is how Minnie tells what transpires next. She stops crying, and I don't have any good things left to say. For a minute, we're just two people wondering why things are the way they are.
I'll never forget the first client that taught me that. Was a woman with horrendous years of abuse as a child and as an adult, and she came to the clinic because she was having these episodes of falling down in public places, and there was no seemingly medical reason for her to be doing this. And oftentimes with her, I had no clue what to do, what to say, or what to offer her. And so one day I had just a little touch of wisdom to say to her, "Is it better if I ask you questions, or is it better if I'm just quiet?" She said, "It's better if you're quiet." So we would sit for 5 or 10 minutes in that silence. She never told me what happened in that time, but I believe she was remembering. Not just connecting back to memories in her life, but actually bringing pieces of herself, members of herself, back together. That in that process of silence, like our definition earlier we talked about, that things come together in that space that otherwise would not come together. Max Picard, a Swiss philosopher, says, "There is more help and healing in silence than in all the useful things. Silence makes things whole again."
Last week, I was talking to a woman that looked vaguely familiar. She lives in the neighborhood of our church, and she came up to me and said, I just want to thank you for offering that longest night service at your church. I was at it a few years ago, and I never got to thank you for it. You might have them at your church, too. It's a worship service that I've been having on December 21st, the day of longest darkness, the most darkness in the whole year, 4 days before what's supposed to be the most happy, joyful time of year, but for people that are having a hard time, that's not the happiest day of their year, and there's not many places to acknowledge their pain or their sadness. And this woman didn't tell me what had been happening that week, that year that she came to our church for that service. But as I thought about what those services provide for the people who come, I realized that we do offer scriptures of hope. We offer homilies or sharing about what that has meant to our lives. But then at the end, we have a time of silence. Then people are invited to come and light candles for a person they're remembering, for their own sadness, or to just stay in their seats while music is being played that they don't have to participate in, just to be. And I remember that that's when people start to cry. That's when the silence brings them to the depth of what's happening inside. And I know as pastors, we need to know when to stop our words and when to trust God to continue working in the silence that we provide, that we begin. We can make safe space by letting go of our need to direct and be open to what might emerge beyond our control. I like to think, people come to me for answers, but an even more important part of my role is helping people to find their own answers. My words can only bring them to the edge of their silence, which is where they find God. The words any of us listen to can only bring us to the edge of silence where we find God. Music can only bring us to the edge of silence where we find God.
I'm going to end this time with some time for silence. In a method of prayer called centering prayer that some of you may be familiar with, it's a contemplative prayer that has its roots in monastic traditions in the desert mothers and fathers, was probably more practiced in the first 16 centuries of our church. And then we lost sight of it for a while. So I'm going to give you a taste of this morning. If it's something that you find yourself attracted to this afternoon in the retreat, you may choose to use it more. If you find that it's something that you want to run from, that's also your option this afternoon. It's a prayer of letting go. And the practice is very simple, in that we are practicing letting go of our thoughts. Our intention is one sole attention, and that is allowing our heart to open to God. That is the intention of this prayer. So first we sit with that sole intention of allowing our heart to open. Whenever a thought arises, you practice letting it go, to remain present to God. And we use a simple word that works for you, maybe peace, open, trust, God, some word that when a thought comes, you can use that word as a way of returning back to your intention of being present to God. This prayer gives us permission and encouragement to come into God's presence. So I invite you to a position that's comfortable for the ending of our time. If it's in your chair, fine. If it's on the floor, fine. But a position that feels like it supports you. And I will give you a few words of guidance, and then we'll enter into this last time of silence together. And we will end our time with a song. Allow your eyes to close and give yourself a chance to notice the rhythm of your breathing. And in that rhythm, allow your body to become still and at rest. And allow your breath to be a reminder of God's presence. As you breathe out, allow this breath to help you let go, so that you can simply be here, aware of your intention to be with God. and allow your mind to bring into your thoughts a word that describes your intention to be open to God. Allow that word to take shape in your mind. And now we sit with our heart's desire to be open to God. And as thoughts come, we will let them go and use our word as a reminder to be open. In this silence, God, we desire our hearts to be open to you.
Bless you, Sandy and John, for leading us into this moment. The invitation now is to move from this space in the peace of Christ to gather at the tables outside for lunch and then at 1 o'clock beginning our retreat time. Go in peace.